Good morning, good noon, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's your Luna here again, bringing you the new episode of Opera Wears. So that was the overture for Verdi's La Rosa de Destino, which again, you can see from the title and the cover, the theme or the opera we're going to review today. But again, before everything, sorry for being really late. First, I spent some time thinking about how can I do my second episode on Romeo and Juliet to revise on some mistakes I made. And the last week was also really packed. I performed for school's musical, catch up to class Carnegie Hall debut through radio, and went to some random performance with all of the high school chorus and the orchestra with literally 10 people at a Stern auditorium at Carnegie Hall on Sunday. And also this Monday, I invited an opera singer from Romeo and Juliet for their Valentine, which I did mention from my last episode, to come to our school to do a Q&A section with After Kissing My Opera Club. That was a great experience. I need to say that the only reason why La Rosa de Destino is somehow attractive to me is because my friends, yes, is plural, multiple friends, kept repeating how good Lisa Davidson was. And one of them even went to La Rosa de Destino 4 times, even though she disliked the staging and the new production aspect. But she did all of that only for Davidson. One thing that is really sad is Davidson only performed for like 3 weeks, and I do have all of this and that to do. And on Thursday, I suddenly realized, oh, if you keep yourself busy, then you'll have infinite amount of things to do. So even though Davidson is away, but considering the fact that there are only 4 performances left, I actually skipped schoolwork in order to see the opera. So now we're here with the new production of Verdi's La Rosa de Destino. The opening for this opera is at February 29th. Yeah, this year is our favorite leap year, when actual day to work. Yay. So as you can see from that, the Met Opera is actually trying to emphasize the importance of this new production. And I was also looking forward to this old classical opera by Verdi, because in certain aspects, I love it. I love Verdi. I'm not trying to say 2 contradictory things, but being attractive and looking forward are 2 whole different concepts and words. Attractive means something that makes me desire of, and looking forward means a moderate amount of general expectation. To me, even though they always do that, but it's kind of interesting to see that they choose La Rosa de Destino for this season. The overall conclusion of this new production is, it is not as bad as Carmen, but still not something that I wouldn't appreciate too much of. Before I went to any reviews on this opera, back to our nice little introductory part. Premiered in 1862 by Verdi, La Rosa de Destino is based on Angel de Salvaturas, Don Avalo on La Fresa de Sino of 1835. It is actually a Spanish play. Angel de Salvaturas is an iconic figure for the Spanish Romanticism movement in the 19th century. For the name of the opera, Verdi took the second half of it and translated from Espanol into Italiano, changed the plot a little bit, but still kept on Avalo, one of the main characters, and also some parts of the plot. Talking about translating Spanish into Italian, one of my Italian friends once said that even though Spanish and Italian is 2 different languages, but they share some common aspect. So even though she doesn't speak Spanish at all, but she can still like kind of understand Spanish and negotiate with Spanish people. And I found that really cool. There's a lot of name involved. I try to make the story of the opera as clear as possible. La Fosa de Delciano is basically about Don Alvaro and Leonora are in love, but they are discovered by Leonora's father, and Alvaro accidentally killed Leonora's father. Leonora and Alvaro were separated, and Leonora tried to seek refuge at a monastery. Alvaro believing Leonora that joins the army, Alvaro's true identity is revealed, leading to a confrontation with Leonora's brother Carlo. Carlo and Alvaro fight each other near Leonora's hermitage. Alvaro wins, but Leonora appeared and she was killed. After Leonora's death, Alvaro tried to seek redemption. That's probably all. The performance history is something that interests me. As always, there are revisions that was made 7 years after the premiere, which is 1869 by some simple calculation. Verdi made the largest change in this revision, an overture replaced the prelude, and also the last scene of the opera was added. As you can see, I played the overture in the beginning of this podcast. By the way, that's Carl Jung and Berlin Philharmonic's version. Compared to the old version where Alvaro jumps into the nearby ravine, the new version with two scenes in the fourth act leave the audience somewhat a happy ending, even though everyone died, but like, okay, they excuse each other, and Alvaro gets back to God and being redeemed. Now, going back to the review section for this new mass production, the first point is very obviously the pace. Mack combines acts one and two together, makes it 85 minutes without any intermission but two brief pause. That's probably 1 or 2 minutes. And unfortunately, I drink like two venti-sized Starbucks coffee before the opera. Don't ask why, because they have the buy one, get one free, and I don't have any friends who go to opera with me, so I was forced to drink two. And I was like, I need to go to the bathroom, but it is 85 minutes, and I try to control myself as hard as possible, and that's really painful. And it is 1.5 hour. I just don't understand why, because apparently, you're not going to let your audience focus for the whole 1.5 hour. And I think they at least need to insert a 5 minute brief pause instead of the 2 minute ones. And that's what really annoys me. And for the production, I was reading some posters, and the first three words on it is a contemporary city, and it literally revealed everything, and my expectation for this immediately went down into the Pacific Ocean. I was trying to figure out a way to like change how the review section can goes. Oh, so now I'm going to talk from act to act instead of reviewing on a specific thing to try to make it as clear as possible. So feel free to jump around if you're interested in any specific thing. So the first act is kind of comfort my panic for new production and the contemporary background a little bit. The staging is relatively absorbing. They have the rotating stage sets off on, but this time it is an interesting one. I do want to say the connection between different parts of the rotating setup design is pretty smart. They put up doors and the singers is running between different sections of the stage while it is moving. They did give a sense of motion along with the correct mood. However, since it is accompanying With that 7-minute overture, I have some really serious disappointment towards Yannick's conducting. I already have that kind of expectation of, oh, I'm not going to trust to let Yannick do all of this alone. And there will definitely be some problem. But today, it is at that level that makes me considering the question. Should I have left 5 seconds after the overture started? Imagine Yannick being on Yannick. The overture of this opera is quite famous and is Verdi's masterpiece, although it is called an overture, but it is closer to a prelude since it is supposed to be a prelude in the original version. And its performance is usually not before the opening, but often after the first scene of the first act. And that's another place where Met Opera changed for this new production. They moved the overture before anyone starts singing. The piece should begin with a powerful horn-like fanfare of the brass instrument, suggesting the irreversibility power of fate. What's problematic about Yannick's conducting on Thursday is that there is literally no density and any management of tempo. I don't see any power of fate, but rather free-floating notes. What the hell am I getting out of here? Leonora, or should I say Elenstakina, starts singing. I cannot recognize her because she's in the main role of three operas this season. The other two were La Bohème and Un Ballo in Maschera. She played Mimi and Amelia. Both are leading main characters. But, I mean, Davison is, how can I describe it? The main Leonora? So you can actually feel the differences between them just by the single aria Mi Ballerina e Orfana in the first act. By the way, please listen to Carla's version. It is really impressive and I use it as reference. And the second act, well, it is when I begin to question myself, why did I live before? They start the second act with projecting some random video of helicopter and fire along the sound effect they made. And after that mysterious woman, Plutosia and her people appears. That's a really interesting thing, but now I have to be very honest and say I see no charisma, but rather a bunch of street prostitutes. I'm really sorry for saying that, but at least my baseline for a character like this is you have to be at least at the level of Carmen from the new production of Carmen. There's no mystery with in this figure along with her presentation that I can see from this new production. They look just really cheap in a way, and I genuinely don't understand why they have a bunch of Burning Moon video on a LED screen as background while people with rabbit hats are dancing. And honestly, that looks so much like the Apple's default moon wallpaper. Apple better sue them. And after all of this and that happened in the military, we are back to Leonora who wants to seek refuge at a monastery while the rotating stage is back. Wow. WOW. That's back to the two-sides front and back style. I'm just thinking if the definition of new production is to have rotating stage and projector with a new setting that doesn't fit the plot properly. I mean, they use the similar stage design in all of the new productions, including Dama Walking, Carmen, and they use rotating stage in the repertory work Nabucco, and right here. Met Opera is a very interesting company, I have to say. Well, however, Elenstakina, her voice is kind of back, her singing in the second act is way more better than what's in the first act. It is brighter and projects better. Now, moving on to the third act. They have the rotating stage again. Now, I'm tired for that. Oh, how does this role function without rotating stage and projectors? Please take that as a sarcastic. We have Fuzuzillo again. I just realized I forgot to mention, but the singer for Fuzuzillo is Maria Varakova, which is another Russian singer. If you know or you don't know, Ilona Stekina is also from Russian. Varakova also sings Fenina in Nabucco, as what I said in my Nabucco episode, my favorite figure from Nabucco is Fenina. And I like to see her again here. Even though Stekina and Varakova are both Russian, and I consider them both use the Russian school singing style instead of an Italian school style. But Stekina is soprano and Varakova is mezzo-soprano. I love Russian mezzos. For example, Aigo Akhmashina from Carmen. By the way, her 24 to 25 schedule is also full with Carmen. Oh gosh, you know, I feel like Akhmashina for Carmen is like Ludwig for a Queen of the Night. I think I'm going too out of topic right now. Please take it as a usual thing within this podcast. The thing good about Varakova is she knows how to put emotions into the arias, and that's really fascinating and attractive to me as an audience. Well, there are definitely a reason why I mentioned Akhmashina and Carmen, because I think all the props for Act 3 came from Carmen. Surprisingly enough, I found the wall they used for Act 4 of Carmen similar to the wall of the camp here. And besides Maria Varakova for Fuzuzillo, Brian Jadot for Varro and Ignor, Golovatenko for Carlo's wonderful singing, the chorus are kind of off a little bit. The lines are blurry and they're not that together. They need more practice, definitely. And an interesting thing is that the Met Opera choose to film a video about how the men's chorus practice as well as their advertisement on Instagram. Wow, they're so brave. Along with the average presentation of the chorus, Yannick's conducting is still unsatisfying, with rushing and overly emphasizing the existence of the orchestra. I don't know why he forced the orchestra in such a hurry. And the fourth, also the last act, I do want to quote directly from the synopsis again. Though the war is over, the world is still on the verge of apocalypse. I don't know where that British accent came from, but okay. All of this and that fancy words with no actual contribution and meaning, well, sounds so much like my English language art essay. And so do the stage. The setting is a bunch of refugees in a subway station. And guess what? That's New York right now with all of the homelesses and refugees sleeping on the subway with the government doing absolutely nothing. So ironic. Haha. To be honest, that subway station looks familiar to me. Yes, I'm referring to Jackson Heights Roosevelt Avenue train station. And to be honest again, this is the best act despite the random subway station setting. The orchestras and the singers are all on points and bring nice harmony to the audience, bringing us the soft but heartbroken resolution for everything. Actually, for me, it is not that heartbreaking because even though everyone died, but like they excuse each other, and I believe if they have a second life, they'll definitely be happy together. Well, that's my review on all of the four acts. The most general conclusion I can make, referring back to what I said before, is that never trust those new production Matt brings and Yannick's conducting style. Singers are great, Verdi's composition is great, everything else, Well, I believe you can make a fair comment on it after watching it or finish listening to the podcast. There are only two performances left for La Forza del Destino, but you can watch it anytime if you have Met Opera in HD. Thank you for listening to this podcast. The next episode will be some additional thoughts on Romeo and Juliet since I went to watch it again, because live performances are very subjective and different from days to days. But it should be a brief episode that's under 10 minutes, probably around 5 minutes. And as always, if you have any questions, comments, opinions on what I said, or you just want to talk to me, feel free to email me at orlandotown@gmail.com. It is AULINDATANG@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. See you in my next episode. Yay! I actually have absolutely no idea about how can I draw a cover for this. Maybe I'll try. Sometimes I'm just out of creative ideas. Okay. But bye, see you in my next episode. Have a nice day.